Blog Talk Radio. that was Michael Tesserian speaking.
Yeah. And
he's done a lot of different research on these areas. It's pretty scary. I would like to hear more about that. I think I'll look online for something.
Well, let's just see what this Brzezinski bastard has to say.
Now, some further perspective on today's events from two former presidential national.
All right, let's go to Bill Gates and its vaccines are used for human depopulation.
Yeah, we've mentioned this several times on the show, but now you can hear it for yourself.
All right. Next are two short excerpts from a recently filmed TED presentation, February 2010, by none other than Bill Microsoft Gates. At the heart of Gates' address is a central global warming dogma which dictates that CO2 emitted by human beings are the primary culprit for the unwanted heating of the globe. Since this article alleged human-induced heating effect stands to devastate the planet, best left unabated, global warming, therefore, is argument that the CO2 is drastically reduced as Bill Gates gradually addresses.
He wants population control.
Right. You will
so
also
he can
gradually
own
hear
more of the world.
Healthcare and reproductive health services to accomplish that same goal. In the second excerpt, you will hear Gates again confirming his profound affections for vaccinations. I saw this before.
Yeah.
It's worth repeating.
I think we had it on before, too.
So.
Over 26 billion tons. For each American, it's about 20 tons. For people in poor countries, it's less than one ton. It's an average of about 5 tons. For everyone on the planet. And somehow we have to make changes that will bring that down to zero. It's been constantly going up. It's only various economic changes that have even flattened it at all. So we have to go from rapidly rising to falling and falling all the way to zero. This equation has four factors, a little bit of multiplication. So you've got a thing on the left, CO2, that you want to get to zero. And that's going to be based on the number of people, the services each person's using on average, the energy on average for each service, and the CO2 being put out per unit of energy. So let's look at each one of these and see how we can get this down to zero. Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero. Now, that's back from high school algebra. But let's take a look. First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. But there we see an increase of about 1.3. The second factor is the services we use.
How does that reduce?
This encompasses everything.
Like
the food we eat, clothing, TV, heating. These are very good things. Getting rid of poverty means providing these services to almost everyone on the planet. And it's a great thing for this number to go up. In the rich world, perhaps the top 1 billion, we probably could cut back and use less. But every year, this number on average is going to go up.
Next excerpt, you'll hear Gates explain what he considers to be the single most important thing that he could choose to see to become a reality in the future, a time span of 50 years.
So this is a wish. It's a very concrete wish that we invent this technology. If you gave me only one wish for the next 50 years, I can pick who's president, I can pick a vaccine, which is something I love, or I could pick that this thing that's half the cost with no CO2 gets invented. This is the wish I would pick. This is the one with the greatest impact. If we don't get this wish, the division between the people who think short-term and long-term will be terrible, between the U.S. and China, between poor countries and rich, and most of all, the lives of those 2 billion will be far worse.
Pretty scary, I think. You think?
Yeah. I'd like to know how vaccines and healthcare work.
Yeah, this one. This might be the same one, though.
We need to meet a new constraint. And that constraint has to do with CO2. CO2 is warming the planet. And the equation on CO2 is actually a very straightforward one. If you sum up the CO2 that gets emitted, that leads to a temperature increase. And that temperature increase leads to some very negative effects. The effects on the weather, perhaps worse, the indirect effects in that the natural ecosystems can't adjust to these rapid changes, and so you get ecosystem collapses. Now, the exact amount of how you map from a certain increase in CO2 to what temperature will be and where the positive feedbacks are, there's some uncertainty there, but not very much. And there's certainly uncertainty about how bad those effects will be, but they will be extremely bad. I asked the top scientists on this several times, do we really have to get down to near zero? Can't we just, you know, cut it in half or a quarter? And the answer is that until we get near to zero, the temperature will continue to rise. And so that's a big challenge. It's very different than saying, you know, we're a 12-foot high truck trying to get under a 10-foot bridge and we can just sort of squeeze under. This is something that has to get to zero. Now, we put out a lot of carbon dioxide every year, over 26 billion tons. For each American, it's about 20 tons. For people in poor countries, it's less than 1 ton. It's an average of about 5 tons for everyone on the planet. And somehow we have to make changes that will bring that down to zero. It's been constantly going up. Thing on the left, unit of energy. So let's look at each one.
That's a repeat of the other. It's just, okay.
According to Bill Gates, we need to get rid of a lot of people and the rest of us need to stop breathing?
That's what he's saying. Essentially, you got to stop carbon dioxide. I mean, if you can't stop carbon dioxide because...
Plants emit it.
Yeah, that's right.
Plants breathe it in, which is good for them.
And carbon dioxide has been stated that carbon dioxide is less than, 1% or 2% of all the gases that are in the air, all right, that we breathe.
And plants need it. They take it in and they give us oxygen.
I mean, the rest is 80% is oxygen.
Yeah,
right?
Which we breathe. 20%
is nitrogen.
Yeah.
All right, or 18%. The rest is CO2.
Then they should have more plants.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Yeah, they emit oxygen.
That emit oxygen and stop chopping down the rainforest and killing all the plants.
And trying to kill people with vaccinations.
These guys have got it all backwards.
And health care. Now, vaccinations and other assorted health care benefits.
Will kill people.
Will kill people.
Nice. Something to look forward to, huh, folks?
Yeah. Now, here's a follow-up. Here's another article, but this one is Florida bows to Big Pharma and keeps mercury in vaccines. And this is pretty sick.
Now, I just want people to remember that kids with Asperger's or autism tend to be very concrete and they follow directions once they're trained to.
So they're perfectly mind controlled already. You know, they can easily.
They tend to do that.
Right. So even though they can be functional, they have the high functioning ones I'm thinking about. And so, in essence, if they don't kill you, if the vaccines don't kill you, they turn you into an automaton. You know.
Yeah.
For the government. So and you do what you're told.
That's right.
And on Friday, May 6, 2011, in Tallahassee, Florida, a Republican state senator filed an amendment to regulate vaccines containing mercury in Florida. The amendment would have made it illegal to buy, sell, manufacture, deliver, import, administer, or distribute any vaccine that contained more than 0.3 micrograms of organic or inorganic mercury per milliliter for children younger than age 7 or pregnant women. Despite the support for this vaccine safety measure, the amendment was voted down. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Florida. Florida's a sick state, man.
I wouldn't want to live there.
No. They're doing all kinds of crap things down there.
Concern continues that mercury in the form of thimerosal is still used in vaccines at all because mercury is recognized to cause cancer, genetic mutations, miscarriages, and birth defects. Thimerosal preserved U.S. vaccines licensed since 2001 because of the 1999 call by the U.S. Public Health Service and the Academy, American Academy, to remove thimerosal from U.S. vaccines as soon as possible. That doesn't even make sense. The amendment would have afforded pregnant women and young children significant protection from mercury exposure through flu shots, which where most doses are still thimerosal preserved and are routinely recommended for administration to children and pregnant women. In March 2009, the Governor's Task Force on Autism Spectrum Disorder in the state of Florida issued a report recommending that Florida explore the prohibition of the purchase and administration of all mercury-containing vaccines. The report also acknowledged a new peer-reviewed scientific literature suggests a causal relationship between mercury exposure from thimerosal-containing vaccines and autism.
Ignoring that report and that ever-increasing evidence of harm, Florida State Senator Nan Rich, a Democrat who opposed the amendment, stated, "All the credible evidence out there shows that thimerosal has nothing to do with autism. As if other proven harms linked to thimerosal and vaccines do not matter." Senator Alan Hayes erroneously claimed mercury had been removed from all vaccines. A prominent Tallahassee lobbyist reported that he had never, in his 20-year career, seen such a swarm of pharmaceutical industry lobbyists descend on Tallahassee in opposition to a bill.
Shows how much money there is in it, folks.
Yeah.
Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs continues to publicize new studies that prove organic mercury in vaccines and elemental mercury in silver amalgam dental fillings are associated with neurological deficits such as autism, language delay in tics in children, and Alzheimer's in adults. A new study from Behavioral Brain Research concluded existing research calls for prudence and removal of thimerosal from all medical, cosmetic, and food products designated from children and pregnant women. Citing a recent study from the University of Brazil, which recognized both the benefit of vaccines and the unnecessary risk of thimerosal, Reverend Lisa K. Sykes, president of COMED, observed, "Putting poison in a baby shot is ludicrous, especially when we know mercury is an unwarranted vaccine ingredient. The Florida senators who voted this amendment down are clearly more interested in the well-being of the lobbyists and the pharmaceutical industry than in the well-being of Florida's children." And that's probably true. And where is that article from, Leo?
PR Newswire. United Business Media. Oh, interesting. I think.
Yeah, they do a lot of health care, I guess.
Senate seeks to create a Caesar. I thought this was interesting.
Emperor Obama's Caesar.
Right.
This is from noisyroom.net, the Progressive Hunter. Senate seeks to create Caesar by Teresa Monroe Hamilton. Let's see what this says. Imperius Rex et Populus Americanus. Senatus Populus Romanus, the apotheosis of a Barack Obama. While all America is distracted and focused on the death of Osama bin Laden, our president and his minions have been fast at work laying the groundwork for S-679, Presidential Appointment Efficiency and Streamlining Act of 2011, to speed through the Senate and then make its way into the House and then go to the president to sign. Yes, the other hand is quickly forming into a dictatorial fist is about to smash our Constitution.
As you will recall, the beginning of the end of liberty in Rome commenced with Augustus Caesar, who compromised the authority of the Senate to the force of arms, and basically the Senate became a facade. America is poised with this proposed bill to morph immediately from a republic into an empire, with the privileged eunuchs of the Senate as window dressing, and a dictator, the first American Caesar, as the country's helm.
And leading the progressive charge is Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York. No big surprise there. Schumer is an elitist Marxist. Yes, he's a Zionist. and a first-class progressive who hates America almost as much as he loves power. He introduced S-679 on March 30, 2011. He was joined by a gaggle of progressives from left and right. This is something I have been warning Americans about for a long time. If we are to survive as a nation, we must rid ourselves of all progressives, or our nation is doomed and freedom will be specked into the dustbin of history. Schumer's esteemed list of constitutional traitors is as followed. Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican, Tennessee.
He's a progressive?
Yep.
It's Democrats
and Republicans.
These guys are traitors.
That's what he said. Senator Jeff Bingham, Democrat, New Mexico.
Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut. Yeah, he didn't take that stand.
No.
Senator Scott Brown, all these new guys.
They're all Zionists.
Senator Thomas Carper.
Scott Brown is a Republican from Massachusetts.
Yeah, he took Kennedy's spot.
Senator Thomas Carper is a Democrat from Delaware.
Susan Collins, Republican from Maine.
Senator Richard Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois.
Mike Johanns, Republican, Nebraska.
Senator Jim Kyle, Republican, Arizona.
Joseph Lieberman, Connecticut. Well, how are you proud of Connecticut?
Yeah, two lousy senators.
Richard Lugar, Republican,
Indiana. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican, Kentucky.
Senator John Reed, Democrat, Rhode Island.
Senator Harry Reid, Democrat, Nevada.
And Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat, Rhode Island.
From the Heritage Foundation, here is a succinct explanation of the bill. The bill reduces the number of presidential appointments that require the consent of the Senate and establishes within the executive branch a working group on streamlining paperwork for executive nominations. Individuals nominated to senior executive offices suffer slow and detailed background investigation and the mounds of duplicative paperwork before a president sends their nomination to the Senate. After nomination, many nominees suffer time-consuming inaction or time-consuming and excruciating action as the Senate proceeds or does not with consideration of the nomination. The sponsors of S-679 have identified a valid problem but propose the wrong solution. Congress should not enact S-679.
In essence, they want to give the president the sole power to appoint people to positions of his choosing without our government. He's already done that, basically.
He's a shadow government already.
He does that with every czar. Czars are not approved. And Obama would be free to do this without the approval of the Senate. Senate approval of such positions is mandated by his Constitution in Article 2, Section 2, under the Appointments Clause. Shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper. And the President alone, in the courts of law or in the heads of departments, emphasis added. This bill will do away, that was right from the Constitution. Okay, and this bill will do away with the checks and balances that separate an American form of government from those such as Venezuela and Brazil. Already, we have power mongers such as Cuss Seinstein, our regulatory czar, more commonly known as the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, and more aptly titled the Office of Government Propaganda. Running amok across the U.S., using agencies such as the EPA as a weapon of regulation and control, there is not a single area in our country that Sustein does not have his claws sunk deep into. It should scare the crap out of Americans, but all I hear are crickets. The silence of capitulation seals our fate as surely as the thunderous applause of approval so ends the Republic.
This keeps going.
Let's
go on to another article. If you want to read more on this, you can go to, what's this website?
Well, I think this is important. I know Americans have not forgotten about Obama's string of czars. Czars that he has supposed to downsize or get rid of. Czars, which in my personal viewpoint, were and still are illegal under the Constitution. But progressives never go away. they just shift, as has done so many of Obama's czars, with this sweeping bill because of the noise coming out. Over 200 positions will no longer require Senate approval. And Obama will dictate. Can you shut that off? Oh, it's coming out of there. No. Okay. The Senate. Is it?
From this right here. There's an ad playing or something.
Depending on my mood, I can be a little bit trendy,
kind of
rock and roll. And
there's a pop-up.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Leo's going to try to get rid of the pop-up. Just a second, folks. I don't know exactly where that came from.
Okay.
So you'll have to go to that article.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot who it was with. Let's check one more time. NoisyRoom.net. Check that out. Kind of fun. Founding Talks.
And really what it's criticizing, the appointments that he's made those
really horrible
czar appointments, and they're the ones that are running the government. Everybody else is just a puppet. No.
There's something interesting, just so you know. We want to provide healthcare reform information at your fingertips now. Healthcare reform will cost taxpayers $1.055 trillion.
The Congressional Budget Office analysis of overall sources of funding for the $1.055 trillion. $60 billion penalties paid by individuals and employers that do not buy insurance. $196 billion in reduced Medicare scheduled payments. $36 billion in cuts to Medicare and Medicaid disproportionate share payments. $70 billion from premiums for long-term care insurance. $132 billion in cuts to Medicare Advantage plans.
$32 billion from taxes on high-cost health plans. $210.2 billion. And new Medicare taxes on wages and self-employment income and on investment income, $60 billion in fees on insurance companies, plus $14.3 billion per year, plus adjustment thereafter, $27 billion in fees on manufacturers and importers of branded pharmaceuticals, plus $2.8 billion per year thereafter.
2.3% excise tax on medical devices, and $58 billion in Pell Grant privatization. It's unrelated to the insurance reform.
This is a bunch of crap. Total bunch of crap.
Some of what we pay.
But they want to gut $176 billion out of Medicare.
Yeah.
Yeah, and take $36 billion in cuts to Medicare and Medicaid disproportionate share payments, $70 billion from premiums. I love this. $60 billion in penalties. They're expecting $60 billion in penalties to pay for this by individuals. That's what was knocked down by the Supreme Court.
I don't understand this.
That's unconstitutional.
Yeah, $196 billion in reduced Medicare scheduled payments. So they're just not going to pay it to people?
Yeah. They're taking it out of there and throwing
it
in here.
Stealing
it. Yeah.
Because you've already paid for that, folks, and
you've
paid taxes.
And now they're going to push it into this program, which is a crock of shit.
Oh, here's something. Summary. Congressional Budget Office analysis, overall source of funding. Let's see. No, down here. This is where I want. Summary. This is
what
we're...
That's what we just read.
No, this down here. Some of what we pay. Health care reform. $150 to $240 a month from long-term care insurance is taken out of your paycheck.
Yeah, right.
That's going to be January 2013. $2,085 per year per individual.
Mandate penalty.
$2,085
per year at individual. 2.5% of gross income is individual mandate penalty.
Oh, that's if you don't have insurance.
You don't buy it, yeah.
Increased health premium for both employer provided and self-employed coverage effective 2011. 2.3 increase on all medical devices, January 2013.
What the hell does that mean? You know?
Medical devices?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be things that people use.
Yeah,
like
well,
walkers.
Why are they increasing that?
I don't know. 10% increase on indoor tanning. I don't understand that. Okay. Seniors using Medicare Advantage.
Effective January 10th, 2010, so that's already in effect.
Oh.
10% increase on indoor tanning.
It must be some kind of tax. Seniors using Medicare Advantage will see premiums rise and benefits cut. $500 billion taken from Medicare to help pay for health care reform. $2.5 billion increase on prescription drugs effective January 2011. Increases continue upward each year. Increased tax for those who itemize medical expenses only amounts over 10% of income.
Who agreed to this crap? I mean, this was agreed to by
the
Congress.
Just let me read more. $2,500 limit on health savings accounts plus other limits, loss of some employer-based coverage, loss of some jobs, and 3.8% tax increase on interest, dividends, home sales, investments, and capital gains if gross is $250,000 effective January 2013. Some of what we get. Stay on parents policy until age 26. Coverage regardless of pre-existing conditions. Coverage for most people who don't currently have it. Health and Human Services will define which treatments are allowed and which aren't. 16,500 new IRS agents at an average pay and benefits of $119,000 per year paid for by you to enforce health care reform and collect the increases you owe.
$120,000 a year they pay those bastards to collect that money.
111 new government agencies fully staffed at an average pay and benefits of $119,000 per year paid by you for each new government employee. Civilian Army Reserve Corps to act within the U.S. federal under federal control. Student loans controlled by the federal government with quotas for certain segments of the population. 2 years of federal service in exchange for 1 year of education. Food and lifestyle restrictions, regulations for you to ensure you follow health care mandates. Government registry of your prescriptions, your medical records, and class 2 and 3 medical devices.
That is a terrible bill. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. The new paycheck deduction. What are they going to do with that?
I don't know.
We will all have RFID chips under our skin by 2017. I don't think so.
Heard about a thousand things about the new health care law we've been talking about for close to over a year. Probably not this, though. Tucked into it, there's a program that has escaped a lot of people's attention, and William Lajeunesse is joining us now to tell us what we're talking about here. William?
Well, Jane, this is something entirely different and totally under the radar, easily the most underreported provision in the health care bill. You look at your paycheck, you see deductions for federal and state taxes, Social Security. Well, soon you will see another federal deduction for long-term care.
Unfortunately, when we're young and we're working, we never think about getting old.
Dolores Bilgoff still lives in her own home, but knows many others aren't so lucky.
A lot of people give up their homes, their apartments, and move in and pay for a good one, a decent one, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month.
But most can't afford that, and a new health care provision aims to help by automatically deducting from American paychecks money for long-term care unless you opt out.
And this is a really scary proposition where the government passed a huge new entitlement program with gimmicks and tricks, and American people don't know that they're going to be automatically enrolled in this by their employer if they don't watch out.
The government expects premiums to average $146 a month. On retirement, enrollees could receive $75 a day in benefits.
$75 a day in flexible cash will be enough for most people who need long-term care and who are at home now to stay at home, which is where they want to be.
Supporters say this puts the burden of paying for long-term care where it belongs, on each individual.
We are convinced that a cash benefit is the best way for consumers to get what they want, where they want it, and when they need it.
But opponents say the fine print tells another story. Unless modifications are made, analysts say, the program will add to future federal budget deficits in a large and growing fashion.
In the early years, there'll be money in it, but at the end of the day, there won't be enough money to cover the problem.
Now, this deduction was scheduled to begin next year. It will probably be 2012. Again, Jane, this is voluntary. However, you have to opt out. And finally, the proponents say this is designed to relieve pressure on Medicaid, but I've seen cost estimates from the government as high as $240 a month. Back to you.
Wow, William.
Who could afford that?
Nah. It's ridiculous.
People that could afford it already have private insurance.
Yep. It's quite ridiculous. It's like... Now, we bitched about this going in. They were absolute, but it's still on, and nobody's reneged. I mean, nobody has tried to repeal this thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans are trying, which makes sense the more it sounds to me. This thing sounds like a nightmare. Well, let's see if there's something more joyful here. There's one. TSA searches an infant for terrorists as a terrorist. Up here in a second. That is from Intel Hub. TSA agents search baby as possible terrorist. There's a picture of them doing it. In the last few months, we have all seen the TSA take the police state to a whole new level. Fondling attractive women, groping six-year-old girls, and searching the disabled as possible terrorists are just a few instances of the TSA openly breaking the law. Now, just days after the Osama bin Laden staged media spectacle, a baby has been searched as a possible terrorist at Kansas City Airport. Apparently, the baby's stroller set off security, which somehow gave the Gestapo the right to check the diaper of a baby. Right on cue, TSA responded on their blog, which has been used to legitimize groping of children in the past. TSA blog says, "We reviewed the screening of this family and found that the child stroller alarmed during explosive screening. Our officers followed proper current screening procedures by screening the family after the alarm, who, by the way, were very cooperative and were on the way to get their gate in no time. The child in the photo was simply receiving a modified pat-down, which doesn't even come close to what the headline, looking for poop bombs, implies."
Well, I don't know.
Boy. TSA has a long history.
Yep.
Covering up their actions through their blog, which is written by someone that uses the screen name Blogger Bob. The outright harassment comes on the heels of a six-year-old girl being groped in New Orleans and an eight-year-old boy groped down in Portland. "We must continue to expose the TSA. Before they are given so much power, we are unable to even film their Stasi-like security grope downs." Okay. So anyway, that's an interesting thing, I thought. Another one. U.S. pays millions of dollars in secret to vaccine-caused autism-injured kids. See below video footage of Fox News exclusive report yesterday announcing the publication today of a new peer-reviewed study containing powerful evidence that not only do vaccines cause autistic conditions, but the U.S. government has been paying out multi-million dollar settlements to a few children and their families lucky enough to have been able to prove their cases, but unlikely enough to have had their family life and child's life destroyed by vaccines. It's about 8 minutes. I don't know.
A group of families who have children with autism are set to announce the results of a major investigation tomorrow. The group saying the federal government had paid out multi-million dollar settlements to dozens of families whose kids suffered brain damage after receiving vaccines. Dr. Sarah Bridges is one of those parents. Dr. Bridges, thanks so much for coming in. We know that you have this groundbreaking announcement to make with dozens of other parents tomorrow. And basically it is that you accepted payment from the government after your child developed autism following childhood vaccines. What led you to believe that it was the vaccine that caused your son's autism?
Well, in the case of my son, in some ways we were lucky. It was very stark what happened. He had been developing well until he was about 4 months old, ahead of his milestones, everything else. Went in for the well baby checkup, got a spate of shots, and that night awoke us with a high-pitched scream, was unconscious when we found him, 106 fever, and then went into a two-hour seizure that they had to finally get him so sedated that he stopped breathing, you know, reviving, going on the whole bit to stop the seizure. That was the demarcation to the point where all of the disabilities started unfolding, and autism was one of them.
And what is so fascinating about what you'll be announcing tomorrow and what you and the other parents say, the federal government has always said that there is no connection between vaccines and autism, though they did have a multi-million dollar payment to one little girl, Hannah Poling, and they said that her case was so unique because she had an underlying mitochondrial condition that did cause autism, but that that would never happen again and that that was very unique. Yet you are living proof that, in fact, they have been paying other parents. How much has your settlement been?
Our settlement has been millions of dollars, and the way that they do it is there's a lump sum for the child. It's not something the parents ever have access to. It is then paid out in an annuity where they figure out the exact life cost for the child over a lifetime. However, let me tell you that, you know, as you're figuring this out, they say helpful things like, but a lot of the kids don't live to be very old with this disability. They figure it right down to the diaper, and it's paid out yearly. So as the government was saying all these things, it was very baffling to me as the parent of a child that the government, out of the other side of their mouth, was saying, yes, your child is disabled, he has autism, he has mental retardation and seizures, and we're going to pay for his care.
And see, because the government has never allowed for this connection, and in fact, they've been quite clear to say that there are no studies that connect autism with vaccines. This, in some ways, smacks of a cover-up. Were you ever told to keep quiet about this settlement?
Very routinely. We had a lawyer who did these kind of cases regularly and talked about how dicey it was to have a topic like autism come up. And even subsequent to winning the case, and I say winning in quotes, you know, if the winning came at the expense of a marriage breaking up, of the other kids going through severe stress, and of my son finally being placed in a home because he needs round-the-clock care. So winning is
relegating. Yes.
But even after that, I was told, you know, this is an annuity. This is something he's not given his money for life. Be careful talking about this. Your best just to, you know, feel lucky you've won this case. And to be quite honest, not knowing other parents, you have no access to anybody. I had no idea how prevalent this was.
And so, yet, tomorrow, you and dozens of other families are taking the bold step, even though you had been told to be quiet because the money could dry up for care, you are taking the bold step of coming out and making what announcement?
Making an announcement that the idea that there's no link between vaccines and autism is a complete red herring. My child was compensated in 2001. There are dozens of other cases like this. And, you know, we know from something like statistics, as soon as we have one exception to what we're saying unequivocally, it's not true. This is not true. You know, certainly there's a risk in parents speaking up. Some aren't comfortable doing that. But frankly, being one of the lucky ones, I feel a real obligation to do that.
And I know that you also want to make the point that you are not anti-vaccine, nor are these other parents. You just want the information to get out there that there is a risk to vaccines.
There's a risk to vaccines. I'm assuming that we'll find out, like so many things, that there's an interaction between genetics and a very few number of people and the vaccines. I'm very pro-vaccine program. I understand public good, that there's often a few that suffer in the context of that. My problem is not taking care of the children that have been the casualties of this. To me, that is completely immoral. And that's where the victimization happened to me, not in the fact that we were unfortunate to be one of the few that was injured.
Stand by, Dr. Bridges, because I want to bring in Dr. Sunera Kumar. She is an assistant professor of surgery at Mount Sinai Medical Center. She's also a member of our medical A team. Dr. Kumar, great to see you. And I know that for doctors, it's always hard to hear parents draw this connection because you don't want widespread panic of parents not vaccinating their children. But this is tough evidence to refute.
It is tough when you see the argument of the investigation coming out as it stands. But let's be very careful about what they say in this investigative report. What they're saying is that parents were being awarded for money that was related to children that were damaged, that developed brain damage from vaccinations. So they don't actually outline that it was for autism, although autism apparently seems to be one of the illnesses that they were awarding money for. But we have to be very, very careful about this. And we have to also take this with a grain of salt. As a mom, Allison, for Dr. Bridges, my heart goes out to her because I can only imagine how distressing it is to find your child being essentially, quote-unquote, and I don't mean this a bad way, damaged or hurt by these vaccinations or injured by these vaccinations. And I can only imagine her distress, and my heart goes out to her. But as a physician, and I'm sure she understands what she clearly does and in that she supports vaccinations, is that we have to practice medicine based as evidence-based medicine, meaning we have to look at statistics. We have to look at studies that have come out and said vaccinations are overall a huge benefit to us, not only as an individual but as a society, which far outweighs the risks of vaccinations. And although autism has been implicated as causing injuries from vaccination or being as an injury, autism is as autism is found to has been implicated in vaccinations, we have to also look at the other studies that have shown that autism is not has not been caused by vaccination.
Sure. And Dr. Bridges, I just want to bring you back to touch on one thing that Dr. Kumar started with, which is the government says that this is encephalopathy. They're just not calling it autism. Is there a distinction in your mind?
Yes, encephalopathy is just a medical term for brain injury. And so what they're saying is that the child they're acknowledging was brain damaged by the vaccine and as a result of that got autism. To me, this is real wordplay. This is semantics. And I would back what that doctor said. As someone trained in science, I agree vaccines are important. I agree that we should have them for public good. The real crime is when we then have children who are damaged for the public good that we don't take care of properly.
And tomorrow, you again will be making this major announcement at noon tomorrow in Washington, D.C. We will be talking to you afterwards. Thanks so much for coming in and previewing this for us and giving us this exclusive to talk about. It's so important. Thank you so much, Dr. Sunera Bridges.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
That was Fox News. That's the insider. Interesting. Pretty sick, actually. And I got one more video that I wanted to bring up tonight. It's about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And it's the Fukushima locals get home leave as radioactive spikes break borders. Okay, so this is on Fukushima, which we're not hearing very much about. This is Russian TV.
Now, a small group of evacuees have briefly been allowed inside the exclusion zone around Japan's damaged Fukushima nuclear plant. For the first time, the government gave permission for short visits so people could gather belongings and check on their properties. Meanwhile, a recent map of contamination released by Japan shows high levels of radiation well outside the evacuation zone. Well, Dr. Robert Jacobs can help shed more light on all this. He's a research associate professor of nuclear history and culture at the Hiroshima Peace Institute. Dr. Jacobs, many thanks for being with us now. If radiation is high even beyond the zone, how can it now be safe to be letting people get closer?
It's not safe. This is a situation where they're letting the people go in one time in order to remove articles from their home, typically a designated person in a family. So that person will certainly have some exposure during that time. It shouldn't be sufficient in a period of going going in for a few hours and leaving to be very threatening to their health, but the real threat is to the people who live in the contaminated areas outside of the exclusion zone. And it's now clear, there have been, for 2 months now, there have been measurements of high levels of radiation outside of the exclusion zone, and as we've heard, high levels present in the schools in the voluntary evacuation zone from 20 to 30 kilometers. And just this week, also, radioactive sludge turned up in the sewage system of one of the nearby cities. So in just a period of less than 2 months, the groundwater contamination has been sufficient to enter into the sewage system of a nearby town. So clearly the levels outside of the zone are fairly high in some areas.
Let's talk about some of the ambiguity still surrounding radiation levels. Those levels detected by workers inside the damaged reactor show that it is much higher than they expected. So why aren't we getting more accurate readings since we're 2 months into the crisis now?
Well, this is a reflection of the incredibly small amount of information that even TEPCO and the Japanese government are operating with. Just in the last day or two, the government entered for the first time since the accident happened, entered into reactor number one, and the idea was that they were going to vent out the radiation that was contained in the building and begin to install a new cooling system. But once they entered into the building, they found that the levels inside were so high that it became impossible to work there. They're now at such a high level that one worker working for 10 minutes will receive a lifetime dose of exposure. So clearly, TEPCO and the government are still in the process of just beginning to learn what are the current conditions. So it's very hard to solve these problems when you don't really know what the sources of the radiation are.
And of course, the situation's far from over, isn't it? There's speculation now that the fourth reactor is leaning and is in danger of falling. How great a concern is that?
It's a very, very serious concern. This began as speculation among those of us watching the incident, because on the webcam in which you can watch it, you can look at the four reactors, it began to be obvious that building number four was leaning to the right a little bit from the visual field of the webcam. And now just tonight, actually, in a release of information from the Japanese government, they have confirmed that there has been work started yesterday to shore up the structure of the building, and specifically the upper floor. Now, in this reactor, you have the spent fuel pool that is a much larger spent fuel pool. It has fuel rods from 3 to 4 reactors in there, and this part of the building is beginning to lean, and because of the explosion of reactor 3, there is some questions about the structural integrity of the building of reactor 4, and if that were to collapse, you would have all of the fuel in that spent fuel pool just scattered about on the ground. And outside of increasing a very, very high level of contamination, you would also have radiation rise to levels that would make it very problematic for workers to continue to work on the site at all.
Now, just lastly and briefly, if you would, Dr. Jacobs, from what you've been saying, it's clear that the situation at Fukushima does remain critical, yet the silence that we're getting is quite deafening, isn't it? Why aren't we hearing more about a facility that's still at risk of causing great amounts of devastation?
Well, in these situations, managing public opinion is as serious an operation as managing the crisis itself. What you have here in Fukushima is you have four reactors that are all still emitting significant amounts of radiation into the environment. So this is not a situation that has been brought under control. It is a situation in which the large releases have been largely, the explosions of the first week have been gone past, but now we just have ongoing leakage. So to continue to tell people about that leakage and to continue to provide a lot of information about that leakage will cause higher levels of distress and also the perception that neither TEPCO nor the government is in control of the situation. So it's a lot easier to just reduce the amount of information that the public has so that you're able to control the situation, at least from the point of view of public opinion, and keep people from panicking.
Okay, Dr. Robert Jacobs from the Hiroshima Peace Institute, many thanks for speaking to us about the ongoing situation at Fukushima. Many thanks.
That's really, really frightening. You gotta get ready. There's one more article I'm hoping I can read before we go. It was how Americans are getting ready understand. Well, here's one anyway. The corporate donations in the 2012 presidential elections. The 2012 presidential election promises to have the most anonymous campaign donations in history. Unless the Obama administration acts, unknown corporate and wealthy interests will fund massive advertising campaigns against and for candidates, but the voters will not know who they are or their real agenda. And the Obama administration can prevent this further corruption of U.S. democracy by taking two steps, neither of which requires action by Congress. And this is by Global Research, CA. And step one, enforce existing laws. Step two, require contractors to disclose political contributions. And this is critical. And President Obama is considering an executive order that would require companies bidding for federal contracts to disclose all of its federal political spending over $5,000 for the previous 2 years, which they now keep secret, including money spent indirectly through third-party organizations like Chamber of Commerce. The proposed transparency order would create one central database on the webpage data.gov that would list the political activities of government contractors and their affiliates. That would be outstanding if they would do that. That would be outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. But that ain't going to happen, and you know it. Obama's a corporate whore. Okay? So those Libyan freaks, yeah. If you think everything's cool in Libya, you're full of it. You're being fooled.
Oh, boy.
The Libyan freedom fighters, the fix is on. So the head of the opposition movement is on the CIA payroll, and first order of business of the insurgent regime is to create a central bank that takes orders from international finance capital.
No kidding.
Yeah. Doesn't look real good for freedom in Libya, does it?
No.
Looks pretty damn good for the banksters, though.
That's why there was a revolution there, folks.
And if the attempt to overthrow it, that's exactly what Ellen said, remember?
Mm-hmm.
She said it was the banksters, not
it's a,
not,
no
not
freedom, no
here.
Democracy, no
right.
anything. It was all central.
Ellen Brown said that in an article.
She's the one that talks about
public banking.
She's a very knowledgeable woman about the money system. She
right.
understands it.
And if the attempt to overthrow Gaddafi had anything to do with the genuine freedom, it's a safe bet that the U.S. government would have had nothing to do with it. But put not your faith in princes.
Yes.
And this is from Ukrnet.info. And Kevin Carson, the Libyan freedom fighters, the fix is on.
It's really
and,
sad.
Yeah. And in a column 3 months ago,
this is goes down and it's, you know, it's kind of long, right?
Yeah.
Too long to read now. It's 8:57.
It's like
2 minutes.
All right. Well, it just says in the column 3 months ago, Egypt let the looting begin. I suggest that I was really going on in Egypt was somewhat different from the official narrative, and quite a few of the people power revolutions in recent years. No matter how sincere the people on the street, it turns out that there are attempts to orchestrate things by people behind the scenes for whom people power was the very last thing on the agenda. In that column, I reported that Frank Wisner, a veteran, described by Vijay Prasad as the counterpunch, his bagman of empire, was Obama's man on the ground.
Wisner, a former director of AIG and Enron, was with longstanding family ties to the OSS and the CIA, has previously been involved in drafting the Bush administration's post-war blueprint for Iraq. The agenda involved so-called privatizations of state industry that amounted to insider deals with global corporate interests for pennies on the dollar, strong intellectual property protections, largely written by Monsanto and the IRIA, and draconian crackdowns on genuine freedom fighters in the labor movement and the Iraqi freedom Congress. Paul Bremer, with the help of his Heritage Foundation boys in the Green Zone, basically oversaw the looting of everything that wasn't nailed down.
Jeez.
In that light, some recent news from Libya is especially interesting. First, Alexander Cockburn, what's really going on in Libya, counterpunch, April 15th, reports that a high priority for the NATO operation in Libya was to see the central banking arrangements of the revolutionary government in Benghazi, On March 19th, they authorized the Central Bank of Benghazi to handle monetary policy for the country. Gaddafi, it seems, had announced his intention to repudiate the dollar and the euro and encourage the use of gold dinar as a common currency by all of Africa. He gained tentative buy-in over the previous year from a number of Arab and African regimes. The government-owned Libyan National Bank in Tripoli, which is independent of the global banking industry, has been a thorn in the flesh of global financier elites for some time.
Things that make you go home. Meanwhile, Russ Baker at Alternate announces CIA man in Libya April 26th at the latest head of rebel forces in Libya, General Khalifa Haftar, is a CIA asset. Haftar has lived in the greater Washington area of Virginia, for almost 20 years, enjoying an unusually comfortable lifestyle, considerably disproportionate to his visible means of support. And Haftar was
headed the military wing of the Libyan National Army, of an opposition movement in exile for most of that time. The CIA-sponsored training operation for the Libyan National Army at a base in Chad during the reign of Bush I with a view to possible future overthrow of Gaddafi. In 1996, Haftar headed a failed overthrow attempt, after which he returned to the U.S. So the head of the opposition movement is on the CIA payroll, and the first order of business of the insurgent regime is to create a central bank that takes orders from the international finance capital. Doesn't look good for freedom in Libya, does it? Looks pretty damn good for the banksters, though. If the attempt to overthrow Gaddafi had anything to do with genuine freedom, it's a safe bet that the U.S. government would have nothing to do with it. Put not your faith in princes. And we're right to the end of our show. It's 9:01.
Yeah, so I want to thank everybody who joined us. And I think Iraq's abandoned children. It's about 2 minutes. I know it's gone over, but it might be worth listening to that. Let's see what.
Around this table of lively little girls is the legacy of a country torn apart, one family at a time. Hara was found in a park 2 weeks ago. She was thrown away. The orphanage says she was tortured. There are burn marks on her genitals, and she can't tell them what happened. Lubna's parents were killed in an explosion. Lara's mother brought her and her twin sister Sara here after their father was killed. Then their mother was kidnapped. There are 40 kids here. The orphanage director says a lot of children end up here because their mothers or fathers remarry after a death or divorce.
In either case, the new wife will not accept the children or the new husband won't, so they are forced to bring them here.
And then there are the infants, abandoned in hospital. Russia was born with a hole in her spine and a brain defect. Rahid is waiting for an operation for a cleft palate.
My dad is full of street kids, but there are only 4 tiny orphanages, and those are only half full. The government says it's because relatives would rather abandon children than bear the shame of bringing them there.
Hisham al-Dahabi, a psychiatry student, has run this unlicensed orphanage since 2003, moving it every time his organization runs out of money. He's been rescuing homeless kids for the past 8 years. There are almost 40 kids here. The most recent arrival, Saif, ended up with his uncle when he lost his parents. Then he turned up in Karbala, about 100 kilometers south of Baghdad. I started working as soon as I arrived there, he says. He sold copies of the Quran and slept on the streets. Hisham says they don't just need money, they need laws which protect children when their parents die, divorce, or abandon them.
The issue isn't just me embracing these 36 children. The issue is the government embracing all the others who are in the streets, and we don't know where they are.
In a society where the only thing that counts is family, kids that have none will face obstacles their entire lives. Hisham says children would be much better off raised by relatives. But for now, he and this house are all they have. Jane Arath, Al Jazeera, Baghdad.
Look what we've done. Look what we've done.
Shame on us. Terrible. Well, there's always more news to read, but We've come to the end of the show, Leo, and let's say goodnight to the folks and stay tuned maybe tomorrow night. Are you going to be on? We're not. You will be on tomorrow night. You'll have a show Thursday night.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this was a novelist. Yeah.
Well, there's all you can read the rest of it tomorrow night. What will you be doing tomorrow night for your show?
Tomorrow night, I usually do some spiritual thing that's reading some form of something. I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow night yet, so join me anyway. I'll be in the fourth dimension.
I don't know whether there's a plan for Friday night or not.
No. Friday night, we're off. George was on last week. So, so anyway.
So enjoy the rest of your night, folks, and tune in tomorrow night.
Yeah, and have a pleasant evening.
Night.